session number 8985, Reel 5.
Mr. Parry, Reel 5.
We move down to a Tangmere satellite known as West Hampnett, which is the present Goodwood motor racing circuit. There were two Tangmere satellites. One was at Merston, which was nearer Chichester, but we were 2 or 3 miles away. I should say probably midway between Chichester and the main Tangmere aerodrome. And for there we did various things like fighter sweeps in the main, and quite often with 603 Squadron Typhoons, who were based at Tangmere proper. And these were sort of straight fighter sweeps from there. Then we also went on to escorting American bombers, and on the particular occasion you're talking about when I got shot down, we rendezvoused with X number of American, oh dear, I can see them, they had the highest wing loading of any aircraft. They were medium bombers, they weren't Fortresses or the others. I hope it'll come to mind in a minute. Anyway, we rendezvoused with them. It was a big do. We had 91 Squadron with us, and Spitfire 12s as what was called escort cover. The bombers were to go in to bomb, in actual fact, where I told you the 109s were Abbeville and Beauvais. They were to bomb the aerodromes there. And they were surrounded by at least one wing of Spitfire 5s who had clipped wings. They were the low-level ones. They were sort of packed all round them. The two squadrons of 12s sat up above, a little above. We were probably flying at about 14,000 feet, just above them and into sun. And we were stacked up. And beyond us, there was another wing, a full wing of three squadrons of nines. I say I can't remember whether the 9A or the 9Bs were the high one. And then again, they had a wing which was known as the Appledore wing, which was controlled by a secret radar place based in Appledore in Kent. They were flying high somewhere. They were up probably 38,000 or something. They were the lucky ones in the fact they were always up above everybody else, and they always went to where the trouble was, and they were always above. So we had a whole mob of these things. Now, halfway across the channel, the man leading our two squadron wing, a wing commander, Harris, I think he was a wing commander then, he turned back for oxygen failure or some reason or another. And as he was leading the wing from 41 Squadron, I took over from him because although I was only a flight commander there, we at that time did not have a CO, Ginger Neal having left us and new one not being appointed. It's a terrible thing to say, but I can't remember who was coming to us in actual fact. I don't suppose I ever met him anyway, but I did know. And then I say everything went all right, and then somebody called up and said there were bandits above, you know. And then somebody else said, I said, watch them. Incidentally, if you led a wing, your business was to keep you in position, really, with escorting bombers, in the right position with the bombers. Your sector of observation really was really like that, you know. It was not behind or anything else. You had other people doing that sort of thing.
About 60 degrees.
And Well, I suppose if you took it like that, it would be 90 that way, but if you split it, yes, well, something like 45 degrees each side of straight, maybe a bit more. But anyway, I don't think there was anything ever laid down, but you had a frontal sector, really, and obviously you had to watch your positioning. These things flew very slowly, I mean, compared with the speed that we went, so, you know, you had to watch it. Anyway, then somebody called up and said, it's a yellow nose. The boys from Abbeville, and I remember making one of my last remarks ever on the thing. I said, oh, well, we won't get any trouble from them because they're yellow-bellied like their noses. And within a few seconds afterwards, whether it was repeated from their Y service, them, I don't know. But we were jumped by these people, and all I heard was... brake left, for Christ's sake, brake left. And I don't know what happened. I did exactly what was told. I broke up, straight up, high left, because that was always, you had to always brake up and not down, because otherwise you left yourself exposed. And I was hit just as I broke, I was hit. I was on fire, so it was, they had self-sealing tanks, but I suppose a cannon shell blew too big a hole or something. There was flame in the front. So I knew that I had to get out, and it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the 24th of September. I couldn't get the hood open. A little butterfly thing that you could pull back on, and I couldn't get it open. And I had this chap behind me. He was not satisfied with the damage he'd done. He was wanting to make sure. And of course, in between twisting and turning and things, the motor was still going all right, but a bit more flame, I suppose. And eventually. It did. The hood opened, and I just got over the side, and the chute worked. Though I didn't use it immediately, I dropped. I suppose, I don't know what I went over at. 10,000, 12,000, I suppose, when I got out. And I did a delayed drop. My clothing was, though I didn't get any damage, was... a little bit charred. There was a bit of the flame there, which I beat out.
On your and it thigh.
Was yes, and it was very. I did a foolish thing anyway. Then I pulled my cord. I suppose I was getting a bit worried. I would say I pulled it maybe 3,000 feet, and it worked perfectly. But I thought in retrospect, what happened if I couldn't have beaten that flame out? I'd have just been cooked in the air there. Anyway, that didn't happen. And I realised there's a FW190, presumably the chap had squirted me down. He came past, and I realised then that I could hardly move this arm, in actual fact. But I waved to him. He didn't wave back, and he just went into a steep turn. And my thoughts... probably didn't actually go to Jumbo Gracie, but I thought this bastard's going to shoot me. So I hung on a parachute line and spilled the air out of it like that. I mean, we were not like these people that do 23 in a stack, and you never jump before in your life anyway. But you knew that if you pulled the one cord, you get the chute and you would side slip down, exactly the same as a plane really, and you'll go down quickly, which I did. And I was watching this fellow, and of course they, even those days, I mean, he probably was flying at maybe 250 miles an hour. It's a long turn round. And I was watching him. And when he got lined up on me, right height, he was some distance away, but he was the right height, I looked down, and I was just going into a wood, edge of a wood. I let go of the thing, and it's an extraordinary thing. I landed on the end, instantly on the end of a branch, And that branch was about, where it went onto the trunk, was about the size of two of those reels. It was huge. It lowered me to the ground, and it just went whoosh, and came off. I could have been stepping off a curb. There was no impact at all. And then there was a burst of gunfire, just went over the top. So he was, in fact, trying to knock me off, in actual fact, which I thought was not really playing the game, because I say that and I mean it. No German was ever shot coming down in Britain during the Battle of Britain. Never, ever, because he was going to be taken prisoner. And if you were coming down in France, it was the same thing. Your chances of escape were minimal, really. People did get away, but... So it was sort of... Well... not done, that sort of thing. Anyway, he didn't do it, but he tried. I don't know what else you want to know on that, except that I got away. I avoided capture by, I like to think, by using a bit of cunning and brains. There was a big wood quite near Beauvais, about 5 kilometres from Beauvais. And I would have said this wood was many hundreds of acres. It was a big wood. And I come down on the edge of it. So I thought, this is no good. You know, quite close to the aerodrome. I mean, it wouldn't take long for them to come out from there with a party to grab anyone. So I just got rid of the chute and pushed it in my Mae West and just pushed it under a bit of, not even a hedge, a bit of bush, that's all. But I ran into the wood to do that, and then I came out, and it's a funny thing, I remember this fence, I can still see that fence. This fence must have been about 15 feet high. I claim I jumped it. I mean, obviously I didn't, but I went over that just without even thinking to the other side, and then I ran into the wood for a while, then I came out, and there was quite a farmhouse quite close, but I couldn't see anybody actually there at that time. And there was a sunken road with quite broad hedges, but being the end of September, there were I don't know what these hedges were, but they were broad. But the foliage was pretty well gone, you know, and they were a bit sparse, each side of the sunken road. And I was going through, the farmhouse, we'll say, was over there, the sunken road here, and I was on this side of the sunken road, and I was just going through an onion patch when I caught sight of the first Germans I'd seen on the ground with their Kolskuttl helmets coming along. I could just see their heads coming along this sunken road round the corner. There was a sort of curve that came round, so I just dived into this hedge. And they came past, well, truly as close as this doorway, but I was lying flat and only peering, and they didn't take any notice. And they got out and they went to the woods, and they were posting people along the woods, I suppose, for... There must have been others. I only saw that lot. Well, that was... I was shot down at 4 o'clock, and it got dark. I'm talking about English time now, and sort of the I don't know what we were on in end of September, whether we were on double summertime or summertime. But anyway, it might have been the same time as they were. I don't know. Anyway, as soon as it got dusk, I thought, I've got to get out of here. So I just walked across this onion patch and out and made my way down. Well, I just made my way, that's all. I just went, and I went towards the coast. And I did that deliberately, because no one in his right mind would have tried to escape going to the coast. Because you had, well, how would you... You know, it was so heavily defended and fortified, you couldn't have pinched a boat. I mean, no chance, whatever. So my mind worked that if I went that way, they wouldn't look for me that way. And I think that's probably how it worked out. Anyway, I walked in the dark and I decided I better lie up. It was raining, which is probably a good thing. So if they brought dogs, they wouldn't have been able to follow me anyway. I lay down in a cabbage field and for a while. It was cold and it was horrible. And I thought about it, and I thought, I'm on a slope like this above a road. That's ridiculous. Anyone on that road when it gets light will see me anyway. I can't stop here. So I went down to the road and I went across it. And I couldn't get through a barbed wire fence. It was a stout one, which turned out to be fortuitous because it was guarding a chalk pit and I'd have just gone over the top, and it so happens. So I went along this fence until it sort of more or less ceased. There was a bit of a fence, but an ordinary fence. I went down through a field and I came to a big hedge and there was a ditch, but it was dry. That time no rain had seeped through. So I decided this was absurd. At night was ridiculous going around you. You know, you didn't know where you were going anyway. So I lay up there, and the only trouble I had, that either one of the planes, the Spitfires that were shot down that day, or 190s, there was a big air battle. In fact, a chap I knew very well in Malta, New Zealand, called Gray Stenberg, he was shot down that day, I think trying to save me, in actual fact, probably. Anyway, he's buried in Beauvais Cemetery, where I've been. Anyway, one of the planes, whichever it may have been, or some plane, had gone into this field where I was sheltering, maybe about 300 or 400 yards down. There was a German working party, you know, salvaging it out. An aircraft goes down something like 30 feet when it's going in at full bore. That's roughly what it is. I could hear the ammunition going off. It keeps exploding. So the only thing it nearly gave me was some cows in this field, and they came along, and as soon as they smelt me, they reared, and I thought, my God, if those Germans happened to be looking, they might wonder what the story was. Anyway, they didn't. So that, again that night, before I'd realised it really was out, I got up, and I was within a matter of 50 yards of a lake. And I realised then how hazardous night walking. It was just simply not on. And then I realised there were a lot of sort of what I call weekend shacks around this lake. So I thought, well, that's good. Not going to be occupied, and I tried to break in, but they were all jolly well barred up, and I couldn't force anything. I had no tools or anything to do with anyway. So then I walked along what I suppose one could call a towpath. It was round this lake, and there was a flash of light, and somebody came out and with a bucket, and I could see in the light through a bucket full of something into the lake. And I thought, well, that's occupied. So I had a conference with myself and decided I couldn't go on like this. I'd been hit in the shoulder, this arm was not much cop. And I just had to have some sort of a help, not necessarily for this, but I mean, you've got to eat. I had an escape pack, which with Horlicks tablets or something in it and a bit of money. Anyway, I went along and I knocked on the door. Now, a voice, there was a silence, and then a voice said something like, Kiala. Now, my French is not much cop now. In the 5 months I was in France, I was fluent, but don't use it in any Northern Rhodesia and places like that, so it's probably all gone, or a lot of it. Anyway, I didn't know there was some, not only asking, you know, Kiala, but something else added. So I knocked again, and then this was a really angry voice and I realised then that telling me to come to another door. I found out afterwards the door I was knocking was just a junk room. He got all bits of boat and stuff in there. So I went to the other door and I knocked there, and the fellow opened it, and I just pushed him back and kicked the door back in, approved, gangster style, and just said to him, "Royal Air Force." So he said, "Oui, oui," sort of idea. So I told him on the Friday, which you'll find was the 24th of September 1943, I'd been involved in this fight. I'm talking in very definitely schoolboy French to him. I had my battle dress. I'd got a roll neck pullover, incidentally, which I'd reversed over my battle dress so that it was just a blue, Air Force blue pullover. Of course, I had Air Force trousers on, but you couldn't see wings or epaulettes or anything like that. And I asked him to help me, and I said, "Want him to look at this and..."
It's your wound.
Yes, I think it's really, really funny, this. I hope you do. So he said, "Take off your clothes, you see." So I got off my pullover battle dress and vest. And then he said, "Bah, c'est rien, I'm pretty true," or something, you see. So he said, "Whiskey, whiskey." So I said, "Whiskey, good." He says, "Whiskey, boom." So he went away, and or maybe it was reversed. I said, "Whiskey, born." He said, "Whiskey, good," or something. Anyway, this sort of conversation went on. And he says, "Right, bend over." And he got something, and he put it on. Boy, it stung like anything, you see. So I said, "Well, that's fine. That'll clean it up." He said, "Well, nothing." I thought, quite frankly, then I must have had a nasty knock. It turned out, in fact, I'd had a piece of a nose cap of a 20mm cannon shell go in there, quite a small piece, but it was the reason why I was subsequently caught. And he said, "You, whiskey?" So I said, "Whiskey bomb." So he got this, and this was beautiful to me. Probably, I don't know what you go when you get beyond Shiva's Regal and go up into this almost colourless stuff, you see, in the breakfast cup, and he gave me a great big breakfast cup with this. He poured himself the same. And their saying in France at that time was always chin chin. They all did it everywhere in France. It was chin chin. So he said chin chin. I thought, well, I better show him, you know, we RAF chaps can knock off, you know, a breakfast cup of whiskey, you know. Flames came out of my nose, ears, the tears ran down my cheek. I thought I was going to die, in actual fact. It was a real raw calvados. God, it was applejack. Terrible. It nearly killed me, that did. Anyway, he just looked at me as if I'd gone mad, because he just drank. Was terrible stuff. Anyway, he put me in the junk room. He had a wife there and two little girls, and I did the usual silly stuff, I spent, you know, I asked them in elementary French, did they go to school, and their eyes were like saucers, and the wife was just like this.
Trembling.
Oh, terrible. She was, oh, was she frightened. So he said, "Well, you can sleep in this junk room until just before dawn, then you must go." So I said, "Fine." But at 3 o'clock he came and said, "You must go." "I'm sorry," but he said, "it's not me, but my wife, she says you must go." He said, "Why you must go?" He said, "Because on the island in the lake," he said, "you could throw a stone nearly there, there's a German camp." And he said, "You must go." I said, "Of course." So he gave me a small bottle of wine, I don't know what it would be, but not very much, a red wine bottle with just junk wine in it. And I left. And I just waited until I could see. Then I walked round this path and I watched the Germans having their reveille and getting organised. He gave me a beret and a raincoat. A raincoat wouldn't have kept any rain out, but nevertheless it was a good disguise. And I went round. Nobody took any notice. Well, nobody on my side on this towpath, only in the camp there. When I got to the end, there was a road and a little village. And I went through the village, and it was a German garrison of some sort there. I don't know. There were a couple of sentries outside a place anywhere with a gateway. I didn't take any notice of them. I just pressed on. But as soon as I got out of that village, there was quite a steep wooded hill, and I went up through that. And I wouldn't have been so keen on that if I'd known what I knew afterwards, that they have wild boars in France, and this area is well known for them in Normandy. I saw some traps, but I didn't know why they had them. Old ones, you know, pits and things. Anyway, I got over the top there, and I came down woods the other side, and I saw a farmer with a white ox ploughing. And I watched him for quite a while, and there was no sign of life anywhere except this chap, so I thought I'd take a chance. So I went down and timed myself right for when he got to the end of a row near the little road that ran there, and I said the same thing to him. Royal Air Force, no, je te tapatu par les Allemands, so forth, and told him. He said he'd seen the fight, and what could he do? And I said, well, I want a pair of shoes. I have flying boots on, and a pair of shoes. I want something to eat. And what could he do? So he said, well, he might be able to do something. And I said, where are the Germans? And he just simply said, partout, partout. So, okay. So he went off. He said he was going for lunch anyway. He said he'd come back after lunch. So I went back in the wood and watched him. And he came back and he was calling for me and that sort of thing. And I took no notice because, you know, you could have been trapped quite easily. Anyway, I thought it's no good. I've got to trust him. And I went, and he gave me what we would call a couple of big slices off, like a cottage loaf, really. And there was a great big bit of raw steak in between. And he said, you know, sort of eat it. And God, the idea of eating raw steak was certainly not my idea. I said, oh, I'd keep it. So I put it inside my battle dress. And he gave me some, I'm sorry, I knocked this gadget. He gave me some coffee. Then he says, whiskey? I said, no, thanks very much. And he thought I was mad, but anyway, that's really the start. And eventually, I slept a night in a farm, and they kicked me out very early hours. They were all frightened. I slept in a haystack one night, which is not easy to do, because you can't get into them. It'd be nice if you could get in a barn in hay, but I got hold of a French farmer who was going into Velmont. The river Seine, of course, goes there, and the bridge had been damaged. It was a single file thing, and there were sentries at each end, and he was furious with the Germans. He had a typical French cart, one of those two-wheeled things, big cart but with two wheels, one horse, and it was full of fodder for Germans' horses, which had been confiscated from his farm. And he was furious, so I said, well, look, I've got to get over the river. So he said, yeah, well, that's all right, sort of idea. And you just walk along behind the cart, and you hang on if you like, as if you're with me. And so I did that, and we were stopped for one-way traffic across this bridge. We were stopped right by the sentry, but he didn't say anything, and I took no notice of him. Went over the bridge, and then this chap told me to beat it because he was turning into whatever this German place where he was delivering it. So I was a bit thirsty by then. I thought, well, it was a cafe place, so I'll go in there and have a beer. I had money, which I did. And I asked for a beer, and she must have said, do I want a blonde or a Brun. So I muttered something, and I got a beer. I thought, well, I might as well have another one. It was a typical continental small-sized effort. And then I started to worry, was beer masculine or feminine? So I muttered something, I thought, oh, God, I'll cross something, you know, like this.